Well, they always said that time heals all wounds. I don't think that there's been enough time between Sunday for us to be fully healed. But it's getting better. Today being gorgeous outside certainly isn't hurting. Sundress conditions always put a smile on my face, hopefully yours too. Welcome to the show. We got a good one for you this afternoon. Baseball about to be all around us, about to be right in the center of the bullseye we aim at with just about the rest of our shows this summer until we start talking a little football. Keith Law is going to join us today. John Morosi is going to join us today. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We haven't had a trifecta in a while. That's happening today. Tony Bruno happening today. Brian Windhorst happening today. Gianna's always happening. What's going on, Gianna?
Hey.
How are you? Good. Good, good. Good Monday. Good things. Good day. Yes.
Good Tuesday.
Settle in. So far, not bad. Not bad. We're up and running. We're off. Things are happening.
We're here, right? Coffee? Did you have coffee?
Yeah, my
coffee. Okay, good. We're good.
I had an iced coffee today. That's how nice it is outside. Oh. Didn't want the hot coffee. Went a little iced coffee. Probably should have gotten a refill before the show started, but here we are. It's too late now. Look, I don't want to spend any time piling on. As a matter of fact, I've got a phenomenally uplifting, positive article to share with you. It was written by The Ringer, and I'm going to hand this to you, Gianna. How would you go ahead pronouncing that last name? This was written by Jonathan Tjarks.
Tjarks? Jarks? Maybe the T is silent?
Maybe the T is silent.
Wow, that's a tough one.
T-J-A-R-K-S. Tjarks. It's like someone took Jerry Tarkanian and Sharks and stuck them together there,
yeah,
and that's kind of what you got. And it's a really positive look at how the Warriors are going to be playing a brand of basketball for the foreseeable future that is the foreseeable future's brand of basketball. And they might not have been a champion this year, but they've got a style of basketball that is probably going to be more relevant 10 years from now than most teams that were in the playoffs. And it's a pretty interesting article. We'll wait till a little bit later on today to share it with you. But TheRinger.com, that's Bill Simmons' new website. I know he's got his new HBO show coming out pretty soon. He uses the F word in an HBO promo, and that's supposed to be like, ooh, spicy hot. It's just the F word on HBO.
I kind of find the promo a little annoying.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I was a little bit disappointed.
You know what I felt? Here's what I like. The promo didn't feel like it was for like an HBO caliber quality show. Like, that's the type of promo I would have expected from something a little more local.
Yeah. Like small market.
Right. It seems like that's that's the kind of promo I expect to see being run for the shows on CSN Bay Area that we're collectively not watching. And that's where I would have expected that.
Yeah. It doesn't work for me.
No, I Bill Simmons's show better be a lot better than the promo.
I hope so.
That's for sure. We're going to have a Tuesday trifecta a little bit later on. We're going to be looking for reasonable people to call into our Tuesday trifecta. That's a little hint, a little preview of what our topic will be today. Be looking for a little reason. People are coming up with reasons after reason after reasons why the Warriors aren't enjoying a parade this afternoon. By the way, today would have been a beautiful day for a parade.
I know. I thought about that earlier. It hurts.
Would have been a beautiful day to spend it out in Oakland and Lake Merritt. Just gorgeous, sunny, happy, short shorts, booties everywhere.
Like, we'd just be wrapping things up right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be just getting back in from your 2:30 afternoon buzz. Like, you would have already have had a pre-parade brunch, and now you'd start, like, ooh, post-parade, another drink, some nachos? You want some nachos?
Sure,
yeah. Some post-parade nachos right about now? Smoke them if you got them. Would have been a fun day. I keep on trying to figure out ways to frame it. Like, what's my elevator pitch? You know, what's the quickest way for me to explain what the hell happened in a very complicated recipe that equaled the Warriors losing? I mean, there's a lot of things happened. A lot of things went into the reasons why the Warriors lost this final. So how do you explain it quickly? How do you explain it quickly? I saw a headline. It was above a Mark Purdy article in the Merck, and it said the Warriors saved their worst 4 minutes of the season for the last 4 minutes of the season. That's a concise way to say it. It really is. That's up there with the simplest explanation that you could have. Because, yes, the officiating changed. Yes, the momentum changed. Yes, Draymond got suspended. Yes, Bogut got injured. All those things are in play. But really what it boils down to, more than anything else, is the gettin'est buckets team of all time couldn't get a bucket when it needed it the most. I know I was on Kerr about playing Azealia. I know that I was on Kerr about the timeouts thing, and we'll ask Brian Windhorst about all that a little bit later on today. Anybody gets a bucket in the last 4 minutes, there might have been a parade today. There wasn't much on TV last night, so you know what I did? I did something I shouldn't have done.
Did you go back and watch the game?
I watched the fourth quarter.
Oh, why?
I know. What else was I going to do? I was like...
Did you want to be sad?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't want to be sad, but I wanted better understanding.
Yeah, it's a different perspective because you were there.
And
so
that, right. And that's the thing. You're there. You're talking. You're looking down. You're tweeting. You're kind of in shock. You know, you need to see it twice before you really understand it. Sometimes you got to go back and look at things a second time. And I thought what I would do is I was going to keep a running diary of like the last 8 minutes and come in here and share that. I will spare you that. I don't, oh, God. No running diary. I don't have that for you today, but man, it was tough to watch when you know the outcome and you're watching and you look at all the opportunity. The Warriors had more good looks than you remember in their last 9 shots of that game. All of them misses. They missed their last 9 shots of the season. And they had some good looks. I know everyone and I walked away thinking I could not believe Steph couldn't shake Kevin Love at the top of the key to get a better look than he did. But there were several looks that should have been a bucket. The gettin'est bucket team ever couldn't get a bucket when it needed it the most. Savage. It was savage. You know, I like different genres of movies. I can get into like an oldie. I can do a musical. I'm a sucker for the sound of music. Yeah, come on, The Hills Are Alive. You know, I love an old movie like The Sting. I love, you know, new movies too. Different genres. I'm not a one only genre type of guy, but there is one genre movie that I would say I like the least. I don't like slasher movies. I don't like torture porn.
Okay.
Like Hostel. No, thank you. No, thank you. The last thing I need to see is a drill bit slowly being plunged into some teenager's eyeball in a Slovakian basement.
Yeah.
That, to me, is not entertainment.
It's like Saws. Those Saw movies are out.
But Saw was actually good.
The first one.
The first Saw was good. And even though it was a movie that had gore in it, the premises of the movie wasn't to put you through as much gore as possible. Like, Hostel is just torture porn.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Hostel is like, let us make you, tonight's viewer, the most physically uncomfortable you've ever been watching a scene. Like, that's the premise of the movie. And for those people who like that kind of stuff, you can have the last 6 minutes of that fourth quarter is the basketball version of Hostel to a Warrior fan.
Ouch.
It's torque. Do not watch it. It's like having a drill bit plunged into your knee for fun. Don't go back. Don't make that mistake. We've got Keith Law talking some baseball. The Giants were streaking until they got shut out. The A's are going to try and get back to it tonight. Keith Law is going to join us at 3:30. But when we come on back, we got some open lines for you. You want to get in? The getting bucketest team ever couldn't get a bucket when it needed it the most. How did that happen? I have bad news, too. In case you want to know how Steph's performance was, as far as MVP goes, it gets filed under worst ever. We'll let you know about that next here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Guy here on the text line's like, hey, Damon, you know, early slasher movies were actually very groundbreaking. Then directors, of course, recreated them forever. They lost all meaning. Scream was the last campy one. Greg in the ATL. But here's the thing. Scream might be a movie that is a slasher movie, but it's actually a movie with a good plot twist. Same thing with Saw. Like, Hostel is teenager in room of stone getting drilled in the face for no real reason other than, well, some guy paid big money to torture this kid who had no idea it was coming. Like, it was.
I didn't see it.
You don't want to.
No, I'm not a fan of those movies. I like thrillers, but not that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Or you can, like I said, just go back and watch the 5 minutes of the last quarter of the NBA Finals, and it's pretty much like Hostel, just on a basketball court.
Ouch.
Awful. Oh, speaking of hostels on basketball courts, real quick. Tangent. Let me chase it for a minute here because I'm a big believer in clean, simple on a basketball court. I've already tweeted this. You can go back through my timeline at Damon Bruce if you'd like visual evidence of what Santa Clara just did. Santa Clara put in a new basketball court at the Levy Center. And it's probably the ugliest basketball court that will be active next season in the NCAA. I have no idea what anyone down there is thinking. First of all, you shouldn't have fired Kerry Keating. Second of all, you should have supported his actual program as he was running it. And thirdly, your basketball court looks like a knockoff Maxwell House coffee can now.
Really?
They got like the Mission down in Santa Clara as the highlight of their court. It's the dumbest, least cool thing of all time. If Steph Curry's getting crushed for having the whitest sneakers of all time, that is the whitest basketball court of all time. It is awful. And someone's like, oh, I guess you have to be from, you know, or, you know, you got to be from California to appreciate missions and palm trees. I guess you got to be from Indiana to know what the hell a basketball court should look like. That thing is an unmitigated abortion of design failure. And I wish the Broncos zero wins. I hope you go defeated on that ugly court, strip it bare, and start over immediately. Shame on you, your design team. I'm embarrassed for all of you.
Is it the background kind of visual part, too, that, you know, how they have like sort of like the hologram kind of in a way? I don't even know how to describe this.
It looks like they tried to recreate the cover of Hotel California.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Or something that isn't basketball at all. It's stupid. All right, I'm done. Steph Curry just came off the worst finals ever for an MVP. He shot the lowest percentage of any MVP ever. He scored the fewest points of any MVP ever. And he had the second most turnovers of any MVP ever, trailing only himself in last year's NBA Finals. I was watching a little Colin Cowherd this morning, and Nick Wright said something that I just had to make a little note of and agree with. He said, Steph Curry had 13 games against the Cavaliers now under his belt in the finals last year and this year, and he was good maybe twice. It's a league of matchups. How do you match up? Well, guess what? When it comes to matching up against the Warriors, hey, the series was close enough to maybe you could say the matchup between the Warriors and the Cavaliers is still interesting. The matchup between the Cavaliers and Steph Curry really isn't that interesting. They handed him his lunch in the NBA Finals. Might have had some good regular season performances, but as everyone's found out in the harshest way possible, regular season doesn't mean quite nearly as much when the postseason doesn't go your way. When the game slows to the pace that an NBA Finals game is played, when it's not a track meet, when half-court offense matters, size and strength start mattering again. And the thing about Curry is I'm not holding his lack of size or lack of strength against him. None of us can be bigger just by working on it. I can't wish myself 4 inches taller. There's nothing I can do in the gym. There's no diet that I can follow that is going to make me taller. And I really believe that Steph has done everything he can to strength train. And I'm sure he's as strong as he can be. You know, your body has physical limitations. And the bigger body throughout the history of basketball has always given the smaller body fits. Really has. They get crazy buckets all year long. And when they needed a bucket the most in the last 4 minutes of Game 7 on your home court, it didn't happen. Greg in San Francisco, thanks for the call, Greg. What do you got?
Hey, Dana, how you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, you know, since you were mentioning movies, kind of in relation to sports, I was just thinking about it. I never got a chance to say my take. You know, this was the greatest to me. This kind of reminded me, in a way, now that you mentioned the movies, of Ali's documentary, When We Were Kings. And I'll tell you where I'm coming from that, is because, as far as I'm concerned, this was the Ali, what LeBron James did was the Ali version of the rope-a-dope. He rope-a-doped Draymond Green into using all that aggression he does against him. That got him suspended, and they gained momentum, and that led to a Game 7. That was one of the greatest forms of gamesmanship and skullduggery, as you called it, yesterday that I've seen. That was brilliant out of LeBron.
It was, and it rubbed a lot of Warrior fans the wrong way, and of course it rubbed you the wrong way because you knew it weakened your team. And LeBron did too. And he absolutely used his platform after the game in the press conference to make sure that the message was sent to league office. This guy should probably get suspended. I mean, desperate men and desperate times call for desperate measures. And LeBron had one switch available left to him. Try to change this lineup. And he did it. And Draymond took the bait.
Yeah, that was the day. I called it the day-day, though.
Thank you, Greg. He did. Rope-a-dope, day-day doped him, whatever. Got him. Got him. I like saying that on MLB Network. I don't know why. It reminds me of Brian Wilson. Lionel in Fremont. How are you, Lionel?
I'm good. How you doing?
What's up?
What's up, John? Real quick, you know, about 48 hours now since the big collapse. And, you know, we can go day and day on this and that. First of all, I just want to say, I know you mentioned just a little bit ago that Warrior fans are bitter about LeBron. I'm not one of them. When LeBron came in this league, I was 18, so I despise him every time he's on the floor against us, but he is so awesome to watch, and those blocks were just so much, just straight beast mode. I mean, the Warriors woke up a beast. They woke up LeBron after game four. And yeah, he did his little trick to get Draymond out. But at the end of the day, the Warriors need to be smarter, you know. And I'm not going to, yesterday you were talking about the blame game and all that. I'm not, yeah, Draymond missed game five. But you know what? Next man up. You know, out of all those, the reasons why he got suspended, how many times do you think did that help us get a win? You know, unfortunately, yes, he wasn't there for game five, but you had three games to win. Now, when you took it to game seven, you know, you had to be sharp, you had to be crisp. And like I said yesterday, you were talking about playing the blame game. I would do a co-ed blame. And, you know, I love you two guys. I'm a diehard Warrior fan, been for 30 years, but Curry gets half the blame, and Curry gets half the blame. Curry's behind the back with 4 minutes left. I was watching that with my two sons, and, you know, I got a high school and an elementary kid. They play basketball, and both of them at the same time are like, what are you doing? This is game seven. Right. These are kids.
Right, your kids were more in the moment than Steph seemed.
You know what I mean?
Be.
And then you got Kerr. I mean, everyone I was watching the game with is yelling, time out. I mean, I know that works sometimes. But, it's game seven. And, you know, yeah, it sucks. It's 48 hours later, and tomorrow truly cleans the parade. And I'm sure you'll either today or tomorrow we're supposed to have our parade. But you know what? This is sports. You never know what's going to happen.
It's why we all lean in. It's why it is the only reality television that you're going to find on television. Believe me, The Bachelorette is produced. All right, Saps. The outcome was predetermined before the first episode. Mark my words. It's like the WWE. They know what's going to happen before the event takes place. That's the beauty of sports. We have no idea what we're about to see. You can believe deeply that it's going to go one way over the other and be completely wrong. Here's how big the finals is. We didn't even have time to talk about Tim Lincecum. He's back. The A's, they haven't even reported to the season yet. And if they did, they'd show up bandaged. The Giants, meanwhile, might have gotten shut out in Pittsburgh yesterday, but they were streaking in near historically good fashion for them right up before they got shut out by the Pirates yesterday. To talk a little baseball, to dive into the diamond, we're going to Keith Law from ESPN. He's their baseball insider. He's ours, too, and he joins me next here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
If you're on hold, you want to talk Warriors basketball, we'll have much more of that pretty much, all summer long as we continue to get over a brutal loss in the NBA Finals. Normally, summer means baseball, but because of the deep runs of the Warriors and the Sharks, it's taken us a while to turn that page. When we do, we're going to be very happy. Keith Law is there reading along with us. He is one of my favorite baseball voices out there, and we're happy to talk to him here on 95.7 The Game. Madison Bumgarner, a tough luck loser yesterday, Keith, but boy, The Giants have really been streaking in the right direction for a team that's got back of the rotation issues, injury issues popping up seemingly every week. They've done not just a good job maintaining, they're playing real good baseball despite everything that's happening around them.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I think, one, it speaks to the depth of the roster, that this is not a club where it's not a Kershaw rotation where if he's not pitching, you're rather concerned about your chances to win that night. It's not a lineup like I would point to Arizona's, where it really runs through just about two guys at this point. San Francisco has never really built their team that way. And I agree, they've got back of the rotation issues. They've got injury issues. There's a little bit of a shortage of power in that lineup right now that I think we've even talked about. You'd like to see them address. But they continue to play well. They actually, I'd say they've been playing their best baseball so far this season. Maybe a little bit of that is the schedule, but honestly, this is just kind of how the team is. It's constructed now and has been constructed over the last 5-6 seasons.
27-9 over their last 36 games. It's one of their coming off the best 35-game stretch since the 1954 World Series, and it's happened very much under the radar. And again, with their backs up against it in some areas, the fact that all this is happening without Hunter Pence, who I think is one of the straw that stirs the drinks Giants, I guess is impressive. Bobby Evans, I think, has got all the room to be patient up into the deadline. What do you think he's most worried about or doing? I mean, it seems like everyone should be getting healthy. Like, you don't need to make a move now that Duffy's hurt. He'll be back in a couple weeks. So what will the move be?
And I don't think, unless we find out Pence is gone for the season, no chance that he's returning at any point, I don't think you do anything with the lineup. I think the lineup, when fully healthy, there's a chance, pretty good chance you'll get everybody back on the field at the same time before the summer's out. You get everybody out there, this lineup's going to be fine. It's going to be probably average to a little above average offensively. And that should be good enough for the front of the rotation, should be good enough with the bullpen, although they'll always make a move for bullpen depth just because I think that's typically how they operate. You got to address the last two spots maybe in the rotation. That's tricky. There's not... I feel like I'm turning into a broken record already. We're not even out of June. The trade deadline market right now is not great. You don't have a lot of teams that are clearly sellers. Some of the teams that are clearly sellers have already kind of strip mined the roster. The Phillies do not have a lot left on the major league roster that they could trade. Atlanta really has Julio Teheran, and that's probably it of players they would trade that would have value to a contender, that is. So all the more reason, I think, for Bobby Evans to take advantage of the situation, the standings, be patient, wait and see if a couple more teams fall out of the race, because they've generally not overpaid for in-season acquisitions. Other than the Zach Wheeler deal, really none of them has come at a particularly high price. You're going to pay something for a good rental, but they've always managed to sort of play in the right end of the market to not overpay in terms of prospects. And I would be shocked if they made any kind of panicky move to do that if this seller's market doesn't materialize.
Keith Law, 95.7 The Game. The A's about to make Sonny Gray available?
I think they would listen. which is not the same as saying he's available, right? You want to call?
Sure.
Have the conversation? Make us an offer? Yes. Could Boston put something together to pry him loose? Absolutely. Could the Cubs? Yes. I don't think they would, because I think they're happy enough with their rotation. I don't know what they would feel about trading within the division, but I think Billy Beane's pretty pragmatic and would probably say to Texas, which is loaded with high-end prospects, guys who are fairly close to the big leagues, we'll talk. Price might be a little higher for you, but we're willing to make a deal within the division if we think it makes our club better. I just think it's the right thing for the A's to listen. And if you don't get an offer you love, you wait until the offseason. You do have the luxury of time with him. And if he has a great second half, his trade value could easily be higher in November and December than it is in July.
Six innings, four hits, an earned run, two walks, two strikeouts. I don't know if Tim Lincecum's all the way back, but he looked pretty good in his return.
Yeah, I think this is what he's going to be. And he's going to have outings where it's three and a third and it's nine hits and it's a bunch of runs and probably not a lot of walks. That's the one thing that he seemed like he was around the plate a lot. He's not going to miss many bats. And, you know, you saw him the last couple of years there. His ability to miss bats is what kind of got him eventually drawn out of the organization. And I don't think that stuff has really returned. The velocity still isn't close to what it was even, I'd say, two, 3 years ago, let alone what it was at peak freak. Could he help the Angels going forward? They don't have a lot of other options at the back of the rotation. So he's going to get a pretty long look. And unless he starts getting absolutely bombed, my guess is he'll spend the rest of the summer at their number five.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the decision to say goodbye to Jose Reyes in Colorado and eat $40 million guaranteed dollars, essentially, over a domestic violence issue that pretty much happened before he even got to Colorado. And now, I'm not naive. Trevor Story is a big reason why they made that choice. But that's a big, big, big chunk of change for a mid-market team to swallow like that. I know you're a very conscientious guy, but in the world of baseball, did they make a good decision?
Setting aside my feelings on domestic violence, which, you know, for listeners who haven't seen me talk about it on Twitter, I have no problem if Jose Reyes never plays another major league game. I don't need these guys in the sport. Thinking strictly baseball, though, I think the problem the Rockies ran into was they really had no place to put Reyes, who cannot play short anymore. Even if he could play third, you've got an all-world third baseman over there. You're going to put him at second when he really can't run. His lateral agility has been compromised. He's not very mobile. We think of Jose Reyes, just the baseball player, leaving the person out of it, as the player he was 3 or 4 years ago. He's not close to that anymore. He really just may not be very good. Or any good. And that was part of why Buster Olney and I talked about this on the podcast last Thursday. Is this that courageous a decision? Are they really taking a moral stand or just saying, this guy wasn't worth a roster spot anyway? We have to pay him no matter what. And by the way, it's better to cut him the $40 million check than double that we were going to end up paying Troy Tulowitzki.
Let's wrap up with maybe the best player in the game right now. And I know that there's not a Giant fan who wants to hear about it, but Clayton Kershaw might be the alpha and omega of all things Major League Baseball. He leads or co-leads in innings, wins, ERA, whip, and strikeout-to-walk ratio, which is an almost pornographic 20-1. It's all-time stuff here. I mean, we're watching, you know, every now and then you're like, okay, this is the real deal. And you see it in Pedro, you saw it in Clemens, mm-hmm. You see it in moments, when Madison Bumgarner pitches, but this guy mm-hmm. really is all to himself unique.
He has strikeout to walk ratio, which is a little bit of a toy stat, but bear with me because this is interesting. I think this is interesting. His strikeout to walk ratio is, like you said, a tick over 20-1. The all-time record for any pitcher who pitched enough to qualify for the ERA title in any full season is about 11.5. So he has a chance to absolutely destroy that.
Right.
We've never seen anyone with that combination of power, stuff, and command. And if you had asked me what's the best combination of power, stuff, and command you'd ever seen, I would have said 99 Pedro, 98, 99, 2000 Pedro. That was probably the best you know, brief stretch of pitching I've personally ever witnessed. And statistically, it held up. And Kershaw's half season so far is better, unequivocally better than that. That's how amazing this half season has been.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think we agree that, like, Bryce Harper is about as dangerous plate appearances you're going to see in Major League Baseball. What is it now? Harper is, I wrote this down last night, Harper is 1-for-15 with 10 strikeouts in his career off of Kershaw.
Yeah. He's got to see that breaking ball in his nightmares.
I think everyone who plays baseball does. Keith,
true.
Always appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Yep, my pleasure.
Thank you. Keith Law here on 95.7 The Game. One of the smartest guys talking baseball. We've got much more coming up. Tony Bruno's at 4 o'clock. We're going to have a Tuesday trifecta today. Reasonable Tuesday trifecta. Little hint. So stick around. Much more on the way. I see we got people still wanting to talk Warriors, roster moves, and what the offseason would look like. And what do you know? The Beverly Hills Rabbi going to check in next as well here on The Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, back to The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Boy, this is a story that Danny just came in and handed me about Jake Peavy. Jake Peavy apparently has been defrauded of $16 million, according to a federal lawsuit. This is a story coming out of the Mercury News. Giant right-hander Jake Peavy, one of three professional athletes, defrauded of millions by a shady investment advisor, according to a lawsuit filed by the SEC that was unsealed today. Peavy, former major leaguer Roy Oswalt, and Mark Sanchez, a quarterback, obviously, are three unnamed clients referenced in the court filing, according to Bloomberg. The filing states that Ash Narian took more than $33 million that was supposed to be directed into conservative investments and instead secretly funneled it into a high-risk, flailing, and debt-ridden private company, which he had a personal stake. Peavy stands to be out $15.1 million.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Oh. That's brutal. I mean, that's just brutal.
Do you not pay attention, though, when you have someone invest in your money? I mean, I know when you get to that dollar amount, it's obviously probably a lot more complicated than what my 401k looks like. But
here it is. This is you never make an investment like that without someone, without a certain degree of trust. And look, the betrayal of trust happens everywhere.
True.
I mean, you know, you want to, like, blame, like, Peavy, weren't you watching?
I mean, I guess it's what you hire someone to do it for,
right,
you.
But that's the thing. Like, yeah. The whole point is, like, hi, I'm a major league pitcher. What do I know about my financial future? That's why I hired this expert to manage my money. And it turns out this guy's not only not an expert, he's a crook.
That's too bad.
I feel terrible for Peavy.
Yeah.
That's awful. I mean, that happening to anybody. You know, you see, I guess the only upside of that is hopefully Peavy's got another big pile of money somewhere that'll get him and his family, through all that. But, you know, when you hear about stories like, you know, Bernie Madoff and that Ponzi scheme and putting old ladies out of their homes and just, Enron and just like, oh,
it's
my
awful.
God. It's like that South Park episode. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and make a $10,000 investment, and it's gone. Brutal. So, as you know, the show has a rabbi. Of course, it's the Beverly Hills Rabbi. And I got to be honest with you, Rabbi. We got you got your guy. I kind of got no guy. LeBron had his guy, I'm sure. LeBron's guy trumped your blessing, but really, the wheels have come off since you handed the phone to your wife that one time. Do you realize that since your wife's appearance on the show, things have not gone well around here?
Okay.
It's the truth. I love her, but come on now. If we have to look
here, she's not here at the moment. She told me to call yesterday. She was here, and I said, "Now I'm going to listen to the whole show. I know I told you I listened all 4 hours.
Thank you.
I want to give you a message from my guy. He wants you to know that you are the greatest.
Oh, thank you.
He respects you greatly. The point is that for many years, people have been picking on LeBron, that he didn't come through in the big games. You remember that, right?
Of course.
And so it was his time. My guy's message only is, I gave you a great nail-biting game. It was not a blowout. It could have gone either way. It has nothing to do with the fact that you were there watching them.
Nothing. Nothing right. at all. Nothing at all. Again, if I could jinx things or change the way sports happened with presence or words, the Cubs would have won a World Series by now in Indiana.
Let's not forget the first record that the Warriors set in the beginning of the season.
24-0.
That's a record. It's in the record book, right?
It's theirs for all time. Is someone vacuuming behind you?
No, it's my air conditioner.
Oh, it must be. Oh, that's right. It's like a heat wave down there.
Still very, it's a little cooler, but it's close to 100 yet here. Not a day for a parade here.
That sounds like an air conditioner working hard to keep you cool,
Rabbi. I'll move away from it. what I wanted to say, who gets credit for that 24-0 record?
The basketball team. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, but who was coaching them?
There was a lot of Walton in there. Are you excited about the Lakers?
Well, you wrote to me and said I have to now go meet Luke. What do you want me to do when I meet Luke?
It's up to you. You can put you can put a blessing on him. You can curse him. Give him the Maloikia, the evil eye, whatever you're most comfortable with. But do it inside and stay cool, Rabbi.
I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm going to continue listening to you.
Thank you.
Even and rooting for the Warriors, but I am going to see what I can do a little bit to bring the Lakers back to where they used to be.
Yeah, look, the NBA is better when the Lakers aren't at the bottom of it. So just get them to the middle and no more glory days. And thank you very much to the Rabbi for calling in and being loyal to the show. He was like, I listened for all 4 hours yesterday, and you know, sometimes it gets repetitive. I said, well, yesterday was one of those rare one-topic-only shows.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, all 4 hours. The only other topic on the show yesterday was Game of Thrones. That's it. We did one Game of Thrones segment and 3 hours and 45 minutes on the Warriors. And that's what happens when you lose a Game 7. Let's go to Omar in San Francisco. How are you, Omar?
What's up, DB? Man, I told you. I kept talking to you about it. You let LeBron come to Game 7. See what happened?
Yeah. When you have a big, wide margin of error and you whittle it down through circumstances, through choices, and you leave yourself with a one and done, you can be done. And that's what happened to the Warriors.
But I got something for you, right? So Lake was talking about he's going to be aggressive. And I got aggressive for you. We dumped Ian Clark, Azili, Varechow, Spates, Harrison Barnes, and why can't we get Durant and Nowitzki?
It's something that I think they're going to consider. I mean, you know, if you believe in strength and numbers, though, you got to toss it out because you're a shallower team. But, boy, do you have an elite starting group, first guy off the bench, if that were something to happen. And, you know, this is going to be a real interesting test for Bob Myers this offseason. And I still don't know what the correct answer is. It feels like Durant. How can it not feel like Durant? The choice to add Durant to your team or not feels like a no-brainer. But when you step back and you look at it, this was a team that was anybody makes a shot in the last 5 minutes of the game away from repeating. How much do you really want to shake up the core and the chemistry? How much? If you bring in Kevin Durant, the number one guy that I think that affects immediately is Klay Thompson. Hey, Klay, you know, you look like a guy who's on his way to being a 27-point-a-night kind of badass. Are you cool rolling that back to 17? Because we got Kevin Durant now, and if you were going to shoot 20 times a game, we're going to ask you to shoot 13 times a game. And that's the way it goes. Why did the Warriors lose to the Cavaliers? They got crushed inside. They didn't have enough rebounding or rim presence. Maybe Joakim Noah would make more sense than Kevin Durant. But the choice between, like, oh, who would you want to add? Kevin Durant, Joakim Noah? It's easy to say Durant, but maybe Noah's the better fit. A guy like Dirk? I mean, look, I love Dirk Nowitzki. I don't know. Right? I mean, what does he give you defensively? What's he got left offensively? the whole trying to win one more title thing would be a good storyline, but is it the best move for the Warriors? I don't know if the Warriors should make any one-and-done moves. Like, they got so much talent to build around. I want to see a group of guys assembled around Steph, Clay, and Dre that'll be with them for the foreseeable future. You know, you bring in Dirk. I guess if Dirk helped you win a title, there'd be no regrets there. But I don't know. Dirk, really? Really? Dirk Nowitzki? Love the idea 4 years ago. I don't know about it right now. Digits. Calling from Contra Costa. What's up, man?
Not much. How are you, Damon?
Doing well.
I'm also doing well. I feel like what happened with the Warriors is pretty compatible with sports history. I know a lot of people are surprised. I also know a lot of people that watched this series didn't start watching until the Warriors started winning, so it doesn't really surprise me. But I'll elaborate. Very few teams have seasons like the Dolphins in 72. Obviously, Dolphins in 72 won every game and the Super Bowl. I feel like what the Warriors did is it's almost like the basketball equivalent of being undefeated in football. And it's also very rare that a player has a season like Frank Robinson in 66. Now, Robinson in 66, you know, got traded to the Orioles, considered washed up, won the Triple Crown that year, unanimous MVP, similar to Steph, although to say that it happens more frequently in baseball is an understatement. Orioles got to the World Series, won the series, and Robinson was the MVP of the series. Very rare that when players or teams have these historical reference point type of seasons, I'm not just saying great, I'm talking record-breaking historical seasons, very rare that they sustain it all the way until they're holding that trophy. I think of the Patriots in 07. Not only the Patriots going undefeated, but Brady...
Here's the thing, you know what? I'm gonna say thank you for the call, but no. I don't. You kind of lost me with what your point even was there. It sounded like a Orioles fan waxing poetic about fond memories. That's the most brutal collapse you could possibly imagine. What just happened to the Warriors is like nothing that's ever happened before in sports. Setting a record for wins with a unanimous MVP and then dropping a series from an insurmountable lead. It commiserates with nothing. It reminds me of nothing. My synapses fire to nothing. That was uniquely painful in its own special way. Speaking of special, Tony Bruno, coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.